but some people might not want to be doing work on themselves on a vacation day.
Well, who doesn't want to talk about stuff?
Sometimes I don't want to talk about stuff.
All right. So welcome, you guys, to Zen Talk number 7.
Bienvenido.
It's July 5th, so happy 4th of July. I hope you had a good day yesterday. So Todd and I are in Galena at my Aunt Peg's house. Who's on this call with us. So we are in kind of like a big room. So if it's a little
echoey.
Echoey, it's because we had to kind of take a room at this club here so we could have some space away from people. Because this is our vacation week, kind of.
But what's great about this is Kathy and I love doing these things. We don't feel like we're working when we do these things.
No.
The minute it feels like work, we probably will stop, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
No. This is fun. So, and there's always something to talk about, right? And we wanted to start today by talking about something that came up with one of my daughters. And I'll start it this way. My oldest daughter and I, today we went out this morning to get coffee. And we were talking about how different people respond to being stimulated or having, you know, different people respond to a lot of stress. And the reason we were talking about that is my middle daughter is a little more like me. And when she feels overwhelmed, she knows it and it's too much for her. And she knows she needs a break from people. And she's very vocal about that in a good way. You know, like she'll be like, I just can't wait to have time by myself. And my older daughter doesn't need that as much, or at least she's not as vocal about it. She's a little more like Todd. And so she and I had a conversation about, I was trying to help her understand because, you know, they all grew up in the same home. So it's not, you know, I was explaining, you know, because she was saying, why is Cameron like this? And why am I like this? And I don't really have the answer for that. That's just how they were born. But they, you know, they live in the same house, but they just have a different experience with sensory they have a different experience with their senses. Meaning, I tried to explain to her that some people are just a little more raw. It's almost like they don't have as many layers to protect them from, from sensory experiences. And so they have to be very thoughtful about taking care of themselves. For example, for those of you who have a child who was born with autism, or you know somebody who was born with autism, sometimes they wear earphones. And they do that because obviously sounds bother them. And we can say, well, sounds, you know, sounds just bother them. But it's also because it's too much sensory information for them. They don't have as many layers to protect them from the way it feels to hear sound. It vibrates their body. It's uncomfortable. They feel sick. They feel
overwhelmed.
Good word. So while we don't have to label it all, it's not about that, you know, it's just that to have that kind of understanding that you, who's listening, you have your own experience with sensory, you know, I keep saying sensory experiences. What am I looking for? You have your own experience with incoming energy and
stimulus,
and other people have a different experience, and there is no right or wrong. So if you have a child who's like, I need to be away from people or I need to have quiet, this isn't something you need to fix or solve. This is something
because that's sometimes where we go to first.
Yes.
How do I fix this kid?
Or you say, we're all fine. Why aren't you fine?
What's your problem, bud?
And instead, it's what do you need so you can get your time away? Or what do you need so you can have your space? Or how can I support you in that? And having an understanding of it rather than something about you needs to change. So that's about the parenting approach, but also you guys who are listening. What is your experience with stimulus? Like when you are in a loud environment, maybe you can manage it just fine, but maybe when you get out of it, like some of you from 4th of July may be like, oh my gosh, the amount of like fireworks I heard last night is driving me crazy. I'm still reverberating through my body. That is a real thing. That's not something that makes you weak. That's not something that means that you can't handle pressure. It just means you have a different relationship with stimulus. And so I've had to really learn this about myself and not be hard on myself about this. Todd totally gets it. And
most of the time,
I still bring it up all the time. So he, you know, I try to explain now you need to go. And I need to stay home for a little bit. And
I'm a go-go. You're a stay.
Mm-hmm. So just another reminder, again, I know we mentioned this on the show a lot, but it's happening right now in our own home where my middle daughter, like we kind of want to be like, let's go to the pool. Like that's where we are right now. We're at the club and we're like, let's go to the pool. And then we're going to go out to dinner tonight. And I have a daughter who's flat on the couch.
Because our last 4 or 5 days have been overwhelmed
crazy.
With family and activities and on the go. And I love that. And she likes it in the moment, but then she needs some recovery time.
Correct.
So right now she's flat on the couch because she says her throat hurts. And her throat probably does hurt.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's not necessarily because of a virus or she caught something.
Yeah, it's not a bug.
It's her body's way of saying, you have to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
And as parents, we have to kind of accommodate that as best we can.
And honor it instead of saying, well, you don't have a fever, so you must be fine. Or I'm looking in your throat and there's nothing there, so you must be fine. Her body is telling her if she cannot slow down herself, her body will slow her down. You know, and sometimes that shows up in a fever or something that may have to do with, you know, your immune system being depressed. And so you catch something and some of it, sometimes it's just, you just don't feel good. And we need to honor that.
And what's funny is she knew that she wanted to come to this place. We're about 2.5 hours west of our house and it's very peaceful and serene and there's less stimulation and there's less things to do. And she even told you either
several times.
What did she say?
She's in the midst of having fun with all of her cousins. She would stop me and say, I'm so glad we're going to Galena because I'm going to need it. You know, like she's like, I'm going to need to be peaceful. I'm going to need to be away from people. And she and I are like, you know, we like her very similar. So I'm like, oh, me too. You know? And again, just to kind of wrap this up, a lot of times what we do to our kids is, and Todd has said this again, not to say that he doesn't believe her, but sometimes when it's like, well, we're doing something fun and then we're going to do something else fun the next day. And Todd will say, well, it's fun. Why yeah. wouldn't she want to do it? It's
you
fun.
You can't have too much fun.
Yet some people can. Like some people will say, I'm willing to have that fun, but I got to recover first. And that does not mean they're a drag or that does not mean that they're a problem that you need to solve. It's them learning how to honor their system. And if you allow them to do that and listen, then as adults, they know how to do it. Do you see what I mean? Because a lot of times as adults, we start to override those signals and we say, well, I just need to work harder or what's wrong with me or I need to have another coffee or, you know, we do things to override those messages. But if as a kid, you have people around you, especially adults who honor those feelings, then you can do it as an adult. So that's our intro, honoring your sensory experience. Again, there's a few questions that people have emailed us, but anybody here, would you like to, if you'd like to type a question?
Or raise your hand.
Or raise your hand.
I don't know how to raise hands, though.
There's a raise hand thing. Someone knows how to do it. But you can just put your hand up, or if you have a question.
Well, John and Allison, we can't see them, so if they put their hand up.
Jennifer raised her hand. Okay, Jennifer, I'm going to unmute you. Okay, Jennifer, can you hear us?
I just have a question about, what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I've learned in my life that I'm pretty sensitive person, meaning lots of things easily penetrate.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you deal in situations where you know that about you and it makes you like especially intuitive about other people's feelings,
mm-hmm.
but you don't get the same in return. So I'll give you an example. I find myself with certain people in my life where I always say to them like, oh, you know, wow, this must be hard. You must be going through this. Or I check in with them. But I don't necessarily feel like other people feel things to the depth that I do. So it's frustrating when other people don't recognize that and want to support that. So what do you do in that situation to protect yourself from disappointment? I feel like, well, why isn't everyone like that? Like, why can't everybody understand feelings to that depth? And I've accepted the fact that people are different, but it's still disappointing to me when I need it. Like, I love doing it for other people, and people seem to appreciate that, but I don't feel like I get it as much from other people. So how do I kind of protect myself from being disappointed with other people not being like that?
It's a great question.
Let me start because I know your answer is going to be good and long.
Well, not necessarily, but...
Probably. First of all, you're probably very similar to Kathy in that you are really empathic and a really good listener and very good validator and a very good friend and a very good mom and all that good stuff. And the bottom line is that there's more people out there that are more going and going and going and don't have the willingness, and I consider myself in this, it's very convenient for me to say, oh, I don't have the capacity to do it. Of course I do, but sometimes I'm too busy going on to the next thing to be a good listener, to be a good empath. So the one is just recognize the fact that you are built a certain way, and it's easier for you to be that person. Then maybe it comes to you, maybe this is a little tricky because I don't want to like let everybody off the hook, but you're just really good at it. And there's a lot of people that are not as likely or willing to do it. So,
because again, Todd's saying, of course they have the capacity, but it's not their natural instinct.
Right. Because so then the thing is you need to discern, you need to fill your own cup. So you need to at least have some people in your life where you know you're going to get a reciprocated response, whether it's a best friend or a therapist or a coach or whatever it is. So it's because to expect everybody to be like that, and I know you're not saying that, but it's simply not realistic. And some of it is, hey, that's your gift to the world. I was going to say cross to bear.
It's
your gift to the world. And that's part of what you do. I have other gifts that I give, but empathic, reciprocated listening is something that doesn't come as easily as it does.
Well, and Todd and I just had like a 2-hour discussion this morning.
I love 2-hour discussions. They're the best.
So what ended up happening is we just spent a lot of time with his family. And so I'm still carrying a lot of that, the feelings about that. And
my family carries a lot of heavy energy. Let's just say
Well, and amazing stuff too. Like we have a ball with them, but there's sometimes things that I have to kind of file away because we're with them for a long time. And then they come up, last night they came up in my dreams. And so I have to wake up and kind of talk to Todd about, here's some things that I'm feeling from you. Here's some things that have not been discussed. Here's some things that I'm feeling from the girls. Here's some things. And Jennifer, like Todd said, that's our thing. That's our role. And I don't mean it's our role, like we're playing a role. That's who we are. Like everybody comes into the world in a different way and we all have our skill set. And sometimes I'm just like you, where when I'm really feeling down or feeling sorry for myself, I will say to Todd, I wish I had myself as my friend in my life. It's like a funny thing to say, but I feel like sometimes the way I'm with other people, I wish some people would be like that with me. Meaning, like you said, like I'll call people or text people and say, how you doing with this or with that? And that's not always reciprocated. And so when I'm feeling depleted, I want to look outside the world and say, everyone should be doing what I'm doing. But when I'm feeling non-depleted, when I'm feeling like I have enough energy, I recognize that that's not everyone else's job. That's a blessing and a grace when they offer that to me. But in no way am I, or any of us, guaranteed to have somebody who is constantly checking in on our emotional well-being. It's great when it happens, but I think there's, what you're asking is how do I, you know, there's an acceptance in it. This is, and an acceptance that, you know, like Todd was about to use the words, your cross to bear, that this is your gift.
But sometimes it is a cross to bear because you don't want to do it. And when you're feeling abundant, when you have an abundant amount of energy, it's your blessing to share with the world. It's a both and. It is a blessing and a gift, and it also sucks sometimes. And that's just the way things are. But you do need to have a few go-to people in your world that you know, you need to have a mirror of yourself.
And also, Jennifer, have some language for it. Like, it really helped me. I don't label myself. I don't walk around saying I'm this or I'm that. But once I understood what an empath was, it helped me understand myself better, that I do feel other people and that it's not it's not something that I should be ashamed of or that is something to be afraid of. I just feel other people. And so I have a word for it now. That's called being an empath. And there are issues that are involved in that where I can, like Cameron, sometimes absorb so much energy that I get sick. And so I have to be careful of that. And once I had the word, and I'm using it here, but I don't use it out in the world very often, then I understood. And then I could identify with other people.
Well, and I'll go in a different direction real quick. It is, there are also times when you can, if you have the rapport in a relationship with a friend or a mom or an aunt or a daughter, not a daughter, but, and sometimes you can be their friend by saying, listen, there's times when I feel like I'm not getting back what I give out. And you might be giving them a gift by lovingly remind them that, because odds are they might be doing that in other relationships in their life. And what Kathy and I appreciate more than anything is authenticity and honesty. And if you can say it to somebody that you already have built-in rapport with and enough deposits where you can kind of give them honest feedback, as opposed to saying, okay, this is my cross to bear, I just have to deal with it. No, sometimes that what we do, you know, Kathy kind of pushed me a little bit this morning with some things that how I've been dealing with certain family things, and that's a gift. And I need to be reminded of that. So it's not just yours to bear. And sometimes you need to share that with somebody that you love. Does that make sense, Jennifer?
It does. It does. And I think that I'm probably in the stage where I'm fighting it more than accepting it. Because I'm looking for, I've been looking for this thing for so long from other people, that I think accepting it more as a balance between a blessing and a curse, as just thinking of it mostly as a curse because it hurt so much. Yeah. So that acceptance piece is really hard.
And you know why, Jennifer? Because a lot, what really what this is for not just you, but me, is saying everyone should be like me. You know, just like we're raising children and we're like, these kids should be like me. I can handle this. They should handle it. I ask how everyone's doing. Everyone else should ask. And the acceptance piece is not just about ourselves. It's about the world, that everybody comes in with different skill sets and then we come together like a puzzle. And so not everyone is supposed to be like you and I. Like, we are that piece. You know, we are the piece of, is everybody doing okay? I can feel you. I'm going to support you. I'm going to help you. And within that, we have to have a balance of helping ourselves. But your children, your sons, your, you know, your partner, your friends, they may not be that puzzle piece. They're a different puzzle piece. And so we look to other people and say, be more like me, but that's not who they're supposed to be. What Todd's saying, though, is we, because we're human, we have every piece. We have capacity to do a lot of different things, maybe not as innately as you and I do, but like, for example, I have a girlfriend who I'm really close to, and there was an issue that came up that she was kind of, it was a pretty serious issue to me, and she was kind of, you know, moving through it really fast, like, I need to get this done, because she had all these things to do, and I had to stop her and say, I don't move that fast, and will you please show up for me, because this is really hard for me. And she was like, thank you. Like, she didn't know that I needed that. And I didn't say to her, why aren't you like me? Or why don't you, like, it's all about, like with Todd, when I have the talk with him, I'm not like, you need to change who you are. I show up and say, here's what I need, which is different, you know, because if we go out in the world and say, why isn't everybody like me? And again, I know you're not saying that at all, Jennifer, but I've had your feelings. I have your feelings. And I think our best tools are to recognize that it gives us an opportunity to be more expressive in what we need. It's an opportunity. And it's also an opportunity to see how everybody has their own gifts. You know, what is everybody bringing to the table? Because he has skills I don't have, man. There's some things he does that I'm like, thank God Todd does that. And look, he's wearing a DeKalb shirt. This is where I'm from.
The DeKalb brats, DeKalb. Everybody.
Yeah.
All right. So let's
thank you.
You're welcome, Jennifer. Who else has a question or wants to make a comment about anything? Either put it in the chat box or raise your hand, even though I don't know how to raise hands yet.
Jennifer does.
But that is Jennifer.
I know, but I'm just saying.
Right. Jennifer does. Away, yeah. I know.
Okay.
All right. Everybody's shy today. So that's fine. We still got a good half hour left. So we do have a question. That, and that'll give you guys maybe some time to think of something. We kind of covered this.
Well, in a little bit. And it's interesting because this will just take this conversation about.
I think this was from Amy, who was on the call, but I'm not sure. But
okay.
Anyways.
If it's not from Amy, that's fine. It's a question about being an empath, ironically enough, and what she's saying. I won't read the whole thing, but what she's saying is the more she develops a sense of mindfulness and being present, the more she recognizes how things affect her. So now that she's more conscious, she's being inundated by all these feelings because she's present. Because what does moving fast and moving on to the next thing help us with? Numbing out, right? If we're like constantly busy or, you know, constantly connected to a technology or whatever, then and numbing out, I'm not throwing numbing out under the bus. Occasionally we all need to to let go a little bit and to not be so, you know, presence is not a 24/7 thing. There are times that we can let go and just kind of not feel everything, you know, in that moment. But what she's saying is now that she's becoming more conscious, she's feeling more overwhelmed by her feelings. Is that, am I reading that correctly, Todd?
The podcast where you talk about phenomenal woman describes that folks with similar gifts often manage by not managing through gaining weight or getting sick.
So I think what she's saying is how then do you manage?
That's fine.
Okay. So speak closer.
I will.
Okay. How do you manage when you are a feeling person? A lot of times when someone is overwhelmed by feelings, they do use things like food. They do use things like, you know, any kind of numbing agent, shopping, drinking, smoking, whatever. What do you use instead? Like, how do you deal? And there's no perfect answer to that. But I would say that being able to, it's kind of like what I was saying to Jennifer before. I feel like we sometimes feel feelings. We were just talking about this with this discussion we were having this morning, is we are so afraid of letting a feeling go through us that we'll push it down before we have to deal with it. If you guys listened to the podcast from yesterday, Todd played a clip from Jacob's Ladder, and it was Danny Aiello who was saying, sometimes if we're so afraid of something, then everything around it feels like demons swarming. That we're like, I can't look at that. I can't deal with that. That's so overwhelming. So it feels like demons. But if you let go and you trust, then all of a sudden it turns into angels. And it's like there's a lot of grace around it. And there's nothing, that the fear that you're feeling isn't necessary. It's, how do I say this in a different way? The fear you're feeling was just a pair of lenses that you had on about it. It really wasn't as scary as you think it was. I call that, for me visually, I have this thing that I do where when something's uncomfortable, I'm like, okay, I gotta move through that uncomfort, that discomfort, so I can get to the other side. For example, I have to start the difficult conversation with Todd. The first 2 minutes of that is the most difficult part because it's like jumping in. And then if I continue the conversation, I get to the other side and there's like wonderful, you're free. Mm-hmm. The things that I was building up in my head, I feel lighter. And it doesn't mean that I won't feel that feeling again. But the other thing we talked about on yesterday's show, one more thing, was the micro bravery. That sometimes just feeling a feeling and sitting with that sadness for a minute is a bravery. It's an act of bravery. Bravery doesn't mean doing things for other people or jumping off buildings or skydiving. It means, can I sit here and cry about that for a minute? And can I just feel the full impact of that? And if you do, you move through it. So what people do instead in answer to this question is they'll say, I'm feeling the feeling. I need to stop it. I need to eat. I need to get busy. I need to move. And if you just be like, that's what I use a meditation practice for, is when I'm having a strong feeling, I go sit there and I look at it.
Right. But you do that in the morning. Like your meditation practice is pretty much first right when you wake up. Mm-hmm. And what do you do if it's 4 p.m, you don't go sit and meditate? What do you do with that?
Well, it depends on what's going on. If I'm in the middle of mothering or I'm in the middle of work and I can't go sit in a meditation, I do have to like kind of, I'm going to not store it away like in my body forever, but that's something I need to deal with. That's
well, and
that
you probably know in the back of your mind that you're going to have tomorrow morning.
Correct.
Too.
Correct.
So it's just the fact that you know that you're going to sit down in quiet will help you manage the 4 p.m. circumstance, because you know that, you know, 13 hours later, you're going to be sitting down somewhere.
And you know, it's that bottom line trust. When something's coming up in your body or your mind, do you trust that it's in your best interest, or do you think you're being attacked? Do you think your mind is attacking you and that the world is against you and that if you look into this, then it's going to be your demise? Or do you look at feelings of sadness and pain as an opportunity to clear something so you can then let it go? And I think my viewpoint is when something's coming up, it's in my best interest to look at it. And I don't mean because, what I mean is that the willingness that anything coming up needs to, it's like a child who's tantruming. It needs to come out it's not, I don't look at children tantruming and go, what rats, what horrible kids, they shouldn't be like that.
Or what horrible parents.
What horrible parents, they shouldn't. I look at a tantrum as, ooh, that's something that needs to come out. Mm-hmm. There's a healthy cycle in it.
And that's the Danny Aiello thing. It's like, how right. are you can look at a tantrum like, what a meltdown.
This what a demon, yeah.
This kid's just a mess. Or you could say, oh my God, how great. Somebody just shared with me on a Facebook page of the dad just looking at his kid mm-hmm. melting down in Whole Foods.
Did you guys see that? Like there was a dad standing over his child and the child was just tantruming and his father was with him.
Oh, was that who?
Because that's how his father handled his tantrums, mm-hmm. was he just let him tantrum. Mm-hmm. Right. And then some would say, well, that parent has no control or they're being permissive. That's not the case at all.
You got to keep him safe. But aside from that, let it come through.
What are feelings? They're our body's way of handling. This goes back to the beginning of the show. I love it when there's threads. That's our body's way of handling the sensory information we're receiving. So when you're watching a movie and you feel like you want to cry, that's your way of handling that sensory. You're getting information and your body's like, ooh, I need to let that go. You know, it's you're handling what's happening. And when something shocks you, you know, you may cry or yell or be angry. I was just talking to Todd this morning about that. I'm starting to embrace my anger a little more. When I get angry about things happening in the country, or it's normal and I should be angry. But the question is then, what do I do with the anger?
So Amy just put something on chat for those of you guys who are listening to the recording. It says, after spending so many years not feeling and now allowing myself to feel, there are so many years to make up for.
Amen.
So unpacking those feelings is intense. How can I let those feelings come out without tantruming as an adult?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, I get it because depending on your age and when you start this kind of thing, like I think I had my first therapy like when I was 27. Mm-hmm. And then in my 30s, I kind of worked with a woman for a long time on kind of that, you know, the old stuff. And then now I'm still working on stuff. So I know what you mean about, there's so much history here. And you're not going to unpack it all at once, nor will you ever unpack all of it. I think the word that really screws us up is that we're going to heal all these past wounds and that, you know, because I look at it, it'll be healed. And then why, you know, I hear people say to me, why am I not healed? Why am I not over this? You may never get over it, meaning it may always have a tinge of pain, but at least you looked at it. At least it's no longer controlling your life.
And the pain is something that brought you to where you are right now. So I know it's hard in the moment to have gratitude towards something traumatic that happened to you. But there is something too that it happened for whatever reason, and you can either use it or it's going to use you. So you kind of use the pain to learn from it and kind of propel you in a different direction, as opposed to this never should have happened. Now in the moment when these troubling things happen to us, then that's not time to heal through it. But once the dust has settled a little bit, you can look at it with maybe a different lens.
And she's saying that there's so much old stuff that it's all coming up at once. Mm-hmm. And that she's like, how do I manage? I'm sure Amy, you sometimes feel like a child, like you said, tantruming, like, oh, there's so much and I'm so angry and I'm so pissed. And this is a personal responsibility thing where we have to have some tools. So there's no perfect thing that I can say to you, and there's no therapist that could even do all this work. This is personal responsibility, and I'll tell you a few things that I do. One thing I do when I feel like there's a lot of things coming at me at once, either internally or externally, is I make a big poster. If you go into my office, you'll see there's a lot of posters on the wall. And what I do is I will be like, it's very healing to me. When I make the decision to make a poster and I'm like, it's poster time, I feel like I'm at least dealing with all these feelings. And what I do is I either type stuff and then print it off, or I go through magazines and I cut things out and I put what I believe the truth to be on these posters. Like, yes, I'm feeling all this pain, but I can feel pain and I can handle it. Or yes, I'm angry with this situation. And maybe I'll make a picture or like have a quote from Maya Angelou that says, when you're angry, blah, 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 blah. You know, like, and so what I'm doing is I'm honoring the way I'm feeling, and what the poster is my pivot from feeling that there's nothing to do, and the poster is there are things to do. And when I say things to do, there's a different way to shift the way I see these things, which is anger's normal. The way I feel is normal. The fact that I feel hurt by this is okay. And the personal responsibility piece is here's how I'm going to manage it. And you have to, you know, Amy, find your people. I mean, in here, you know, because you know all of us understand. Find your role models, the Maya Angelous of the world, the Oprahs of the world, the Gloria Steinems of the world. And they don't just have to be women. They can be men too. And touch base with their quotes and their books and their biographies and gain strength from other people who have felt similar to you. I remember one time when I was really, really sad and I was feeling overwhelmed by my life and, you know, having one of those days. And I went into the bookstore and I sat in the self-help section where I sit a lot. And I miss bookstores. They're so not around anymore. And I found Joan Rivers' biography. It was years ago, 20 years ago. And I read just the first three chapters and I was like, dude,
why was that helpful?
This woman has gone through so much and she kept, and even if you don't like Joan Rivers' comedy, she got up, she got up, she got up. And so I got up.
Yeah. Didn't she have a husband that committed suicide?
Yeah, she did.
Among other things, mm-hmm. right?
Among so many other things. So Liz,
so Liz asked, when you're looking for someone to help you work through this stuff and or other stuff, what do you look for and what kind of questions do you ask in looking for a coach and or a therapist?
It's a great question.
It is a good question.
You know, it first of all, just your question is good in itself because what you're saying is I know that not every therapist is a match for me and every coach is not a match for me. That's truth. If you have a hard time with, if you meet with a therapist or a coach and you're like, this doesn't feel right, you don't need to think to yourself, they suck or I suck. It's just not the right pairing. Mm. Just like you can't marry everybody or you can't be best friends with everybody. Not everything is a great pairing. What I tend to do for myself or when other people are asking for advice is I go and look at the words they use on their website or on their psychology. For those of you looking, you can go to Psychology Today and look up therapist, psychologytoday.com. What words do they use? Do they use the word mindfulness? Do they use the word cognitive behavioral therapy? Do they talk about their history? Do they have some experience? Where did they train? Are they holistic?
Well, I remember when I wasn't actually even looking for my coach. I was researching a men's group meeting that I was going to facilitate. And I just Googled men and vulnerability. And I stumbled across this guy's website who wrote a blog about men and vulnerability. But his title underneath his name's Tom Fuller. I speak with him about once a month, and he lives out in Portland. But his title for himself was psycho-spiritual counselor. Mm. Because if I had some guy that's way into the spirituality, I know that that wasn't going to be a good fit for me. I needed that balance between
psychology
and spiritual. And that is, it's funny. I never even thought about it until you just said it, but that's what resonated with me.
Yeah. So. And that's the thing is you have these gut instincts. And also Liz, if you are thinking about a coach, just email me because I know if you want to do someone face to face, I don't know if I can help a ton, but possibly. And there's also a lot of coaches I know, parent coaches, who geography doesn't matter. They'll work over the phone. So email me and I'll maybe give you some tips there too. But if you're just going to do an online search, you know, everybody else.
When ask for referrals too.
Yeah.
You get good friends who mm-hmm. like their person, then ask them.
Yeah. And you know, just do, and I wouldn't depend on things like Yelp and that too much because you never know why people are writing what they're writing. They could have great reviews because they asked 10 of their best friends to write the reviews, and they could have bad reviews just because someone felt pressured by them and it really wasn't honestly that they're not skilled.
Have the guts to, if you try somebody and it doesn't work out, don't stick with them.
Todd does, his first session with men, it's free. So they can make a decision or whether or not they want to stay.
And if I think that they're a good fit for me, it goes both ways. So mm-hmm. anyways.
Yeah. So that's a good question. And I think that if first you do not succeed, try again, meaning don't throw up your hands and say, there's nobody there for me. There is. And when you find that right person, there's a woman I'm working with right now. I went for years and years and years without, you know, I needed a break from other people teaching me for a while. And now there's this woman that I'm working with who I just love so much. And she's like in her late 60s and she's so like the blend of just kind and, you know, very, we have the same backgrounds, you know, psychology background, but also holistic, and she loves mindfulness. And I mean, she just listens to me. I just go in there and blah, 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 blah. And when I leave, I just feel so cared about, where a lot of therapists that didn't, I had a hard time doing that with other people, because a lot of times I felt like they were my peers. So, but this, there's something about her. I really like her, don't I?
Yes, you do.
I talk about her a lot. So.
What else? I have some more questions here, a little more practical or fun. But if somebody else has something, raise your hand or just do a chat. So in the meantime, and I think this came from maybe from Amy too, what other games do you suggest to be a good family bonding game? And I love games. Do you love games?
Not as much as you do.
Kathy doesn't like games as much.
I'll just, yeah, my aunt's laughing. I'll just watch. I'm happy to watch the game, and I'm happy. But Todd's like, you got to join the game. And I'm like, but if I watch the game, I'm happy.
I know, but it's more fun when you're in the game.
But I like to watch people I love having fun. That, to me, is enough. I'm there in spirit.
And physically, but you're reading a magazine on the couch.
Yes. So happy.
She's very happy. Her favorite time is when you're reading a magazine on the couch and we're all doing something fun.
Yes, everybody's happy.
Sounds boring to me.
But see?
She's missing out on the game.
To you. To me, I am happy. So that's the thing, is he doesn't really make me play. Sometimes he makes me play.
Oh, back in the old days, I'd be like, what's your problem, bud?
You're like, but this is fun, but this is fun. And I'm like, to you. Not to me, but tell them about your games.
Let's see. Well, we talk about the game of life. It's so age dependent. So it's hard for me to give a really good answer. Liz just said, we recently found a new game that is good for big groups called Code Names.
What do you do in Code Names?
Yeah.
Liz, I'm going to take you. Where are you?
I think she's right there.
That's Lindsay. Liz.
Oh, that's Liz. There you go.
Liz, how do you play Code Names?
Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's just a box full of words, and so it is mostly for older kids. That's the thing, though. And you just set them up 4x4, and then you're on teams, and you have to use one word to relate. And then there's this other card that tells you which words are your words for your team, but your team doesn't know that. Only the person who is in charge of the team, or you know, it. And I'm really bad at explaining things, but basically you have to find one word. So say you have the word shell, ocean, and shark. You have to find one word that would let your team know that those three cards are yours. And it's just really, it's really fun. It's hard. And if you don't do it with people, you know, you think, you know, I play with my husband a lot. I'm just like, really? You didn't get that? But it's okay. It's really fun. It's really fun. And it's very simple. It doesn't have a lot of pieces or anything like that. And that's why we love it so much. But it's great for, you know, when families come over and you guys can all play together. It's just a fun, you know, kind of game. So it's just one we found recently.
Thank you, Liz.
Do you know what it reminds me of?
I'm going to mute her.
Okay. Is that game... Code Names reminds me of that game that we played, the one where you have to put the pieces to like describe. Oh, yeah. What was that
Pictionary.
Called?
It's not Pictionary, but yeah, it's a bunch of pictures on a board, and you put little pieces on the board to try to get your team
to come up with what you're talking
with
about.
What the one word, and there's just different levels. That's an interesting game. I'll put that in the show notes. I'll figure out what that was that we bought. Another game that's easy, because sometimes it's frustrating because it's hard to even to get people off the couch to the table. Apples to apples, you can play while sitting around a couch setting. Mm-hmm. And you have Apples to Apples Junior, which is also good because, you know, a 6-year-old or a 7-year-old or an 8-year-old can play Apples to Apples Junior. So the great part about that is there's really no winners or losers, which I know some people like. And there is
less competition, the better.
And it's casual, and you can take breaks, and it's a lot of laughter. So Apples to Apples is a good one too.
And one thing that is not really a game per se, because there's no winners or losers, is yesterday when we took off for Galena, where we are now, the first thing we did is Todd has in our glove compartment a book called What If? And you guys probably know the What If book. There's a million derivations of that book. But it just has questions like, what was the question you asked yesterday? If you had to...
Some of them are deep, some of them are shallow, but
What was the one we were talking about?
That was yesterday, sweetie.
It was just so long ago.
Yeah.
You just can't pull it up.
Plus, we only went through 3 or 4 questions because I just finished eating, and I get tired after I eat. So I took an hour and a half nap on the car ride, and it was luxurious.
But the what if game, there's no game except to ask the question, and everybody gets an opportunity to share their perspective.
It's a vehicle for discussion.
It's a vehicle for discussion. It's also a vehicle for hearing how everybody thinks differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a daughter who's very practical and is like, this is what I do. And then I have the daughter. So let me tell you why my girls get mad at me with games like What If. My children will come up to me and they'll be like, Mom, which character is your favorite Friends character? Or Mom, why do you like The Wizard of Oz? Or Mom, and they ask me these questions where I'll go, well, I don't have one answer for that. And they'll be like, you never have one answer for that.
Ask you like who's your favorite friend, or, and you'll be like, oh, I like them all.
Or I like them all. Or I like Monica because of this. And I like Chandler because of this. And they're like, no, you have to pick one. And I don't pick one. I say, listen, I know it bugs you that I don't pick one, but my brain doesn't work that way. And what I'm not in a teaching mode. I'm just trying to be myself. Like, they want to narrow things down. And what I'm doing by remaining myself is saying things aren't always narrowed down. There's gray. I'm gray.
I used to do that to my mom when I was a little kid because, you know, we had the records, you know, the big records and put on the record player. And her favorites were Elvis, Neil Diamond, Kenny Rogers, Willie Nelson, and Frank Sinatra. We'd always ask her which one is her favorite. She would get mad even when we would ask the question because she knew that we wouldn't allow or permit her to not say one. But she never said one. But I personally think it was Frank Sinatra.
And the thing is it's kind of like what we were saying at the beginning about accepting people. Why do we think we get to decide what people should like and what they should say? It's
because I want them to fit in
with your boxes.
That's right.
You know, we want everybody to fit into this thing perfectly, and they don't. And the more we remain ourselves, the more we give our children, when they say, wait, I like Chandler and Monica too, we give them permission to like both of them and to not feel like they have to decide on one or the other, because liking Chandler and Monica means that you can like two different kinds of people. You can like a Monica, who's very OCD and structured and practical, and you can like Chandler, who's like more lighthearted and more, and you don't have to be one or the other. You get to be the paradox of both. And that, so really what they're saying is, Mom, who are you? And I'm saying I'm both.
Yeah. And the correct answer to the question was Ross.
Hi, I'm Ross.
Ross is the best character.
Ross is great.
And the thing, nobody loves Ross the most.
I love Ross.
But you don't love him the most.
No, I don't. But I love him.
I love Ross.
Okay, there's a great thing that Jennifer said here. Susan David, Jennifer, I listened to that podcast too, and I, you know, reading Emotional Agility.
What
or I'm
podcast?
Done with that.
Not everybody knows.
Oh, so Jennifer says a great quote from Susan David, and she's the one who wrote Emotional Agility, heard on the Good Life podcast with Jonathan Fields. It says, discomfort is the price of admission to a meaningful life. Jennifer, thank you so much for sharing that. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is fear walking. And that's Susan David probably said that. And obviously we know that Brene Brown says that. We know that anybody who researches fear and courage is not something you just, we were talking to Cameron about this last night. Courage is not something you are. Brave is not something you are. It's a skill you practice when you feel afraid. So when you are having, you know, the ability to practice micro bravery, that's what courage is when you're afraid and you say, I'm going to do this. Or when I'm feeling uncomfortable and I feel like Todd's not present, the way that we stay good friends is I say, I need to talk to you about something. Well, and he gets annoyed. And
no, but here's the thing. I think the reason our marriage is as healthy as it is, you know, I obviously play a significant role in it, but it is your ability to have to walk the discomfort is the price of admission to a meaningful life, because it's really hard to strike up a conversation that you know is going to go heavy or is going to go, there's going to be emotion around it, but you maintain the strength to do that much better than I do. And I think there's a lot of marriages out there that they don't want to upset their partner. They don't want to share their vulnerability. And then they go through a marriage that is kind of more surfacey, or they get a divorce or whatever it is. And that is like, if, you know, I see these people who are newlyweds and I'd be like, we can help them. I know we can help them because I know more now and it's not like the newlyweds are doing anything wrong. They don't know. We didn't take a class in college of how to be good at being married.
or be good. And you know, as I've said before, the whole like, this is my husband, I'm married, take those words out of it. How do you remain friends with this person? How do you maintain a relationship with respect and integrity? And if you're carrying around of emotion or unmet needs or things that you've never said or anger that you experience, because sometimes Todd says something that will offend me and he didn't know it offended me. So it's my job to say I was offended, but not to say, Todd, there's something wrong with you, change. But let me tell you why I was offended. Here's how I hear that. And then he'll say, here's how I meant it. And then I'll go, oh, okay.
Well, and that's the delicate balance between intention and impact, because my intention is never to hurt Kathy. But there are times when my actions or my absence of actions are impact her negatively. Mm-hmm. So it's because a lot of times I work with men and we hide behind our intention. We're like, well, I didn't mean to do it. So there's no reason for you to be mad. No, the impact of whatever it is that's happening is meaningful and a vehicle for a bigger discussion. But a lot of us guys hide behind our intention to not harm our wives or not harm our kids. I use impact as my gauge much more than my intention, because right. I spent decades hiding behind intention, and the impact is much more significant of a barometer for me than anything else.
Because what he's saying is that if a man or woman, for that matter, because women can do this too, says, well, that wasn't my intention, therefore it shouldn't have offended you, then somehow they've pushed it off on you and said, you're the problem, because that wasn't my intention and you're hurt by it and you're the problem. And what you're saying is your intention may have been good, but the way I receive it, because of, again, pulling the threads together from beginning, because of my sensitivity and my history and the way I'm triggered, is I hear it this way. And the more, going back to Amy's question, the more we can do that in the moment, what Todd and I referred to on the show as mini meltdowns, and they're not even meltdowns, they're just
right, that's
mini,
just a term that we came up with, but we have one this morning.
Yeah, like a mini conversation that's intense. The more that you can have small, intense conversations, the less you're going to have a huge blow up. Because a huge blow up is the tantrum of, I haven't been heard for months. But if you're like, I wasn't heard last night, then you have that conversation. And then you, the next week, you say, I wasn't, you know, on Wednesday, we didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I was upset about this. And you deal with it in the moment, and then there's no big tantrum. And then there's no like, and not that there's anything wrong with tantrums, but you lessen the heaviness of those conversations. You know what, it's 12:50 already.
One other game is Cranium. It's more for older kids, but I love it because it's cross between Pictionary and charades and creativity, because you get the little piece of Play-Doh, and it's fun. So Cranium is another.
And music, you have to come up with lyrics to songs. Todd couldn't come up to with that Carpenter song. Just like me,
they long to be two little birds.
That's what he thought the words
were. It's an inside joke, but we still
it's
say,
close to you. Was the true answer.
And all I had to do was say close to you, but instead I thought the next line was two little birds.
And we lost.
We lost.
That was it.
We're losers.
So one more game that Todd's been into lately, which I am not, is dodgeball. He went out and bought all these dodgeballs, and he's like, come on, kids, we're going to go throw balls at each other's head. And it's not fun to me.
It's so much fun.
I'm going to put that out there. So,
well, I may have shared this on the podcast, but for my men's group, we did our June meeting is always doing something fun and athletic outside, not working on ourselves with conversation. And we played dodgeball and it was an absolute blast. Love it.
Right.
Because that's what we used to do in day camp, was we play dodgeball.
Right.
It's a very little kid game.
Right.
And we need to recapture our little kidness inside of us.
Right, right.
Can I get a witness? What do you say? Can I get a testimony?
Can I get a hell yeah?
Can I get a hell yeah?
Well, there was someone who said, I'm not going to play this with you because I tried to avoid this game all through junior high, so you can't make me play now. So let's close up shop because it's late and we kept you guys on late. So thank you for these questions and these comments. Keep them coming. Email us and we'll read them, or you can always do the chat. You can always raise your hand.
But it's better when you say it. Right, Jennifer? That's right. So I want to say thank you to Peggy and Jennifer and Karen and Liz and Lindsay. And Millie from San Francisco, Amy Rose, Carrie, John, and Allison.
We love you guys. And again, as always, if you are like, wait, this isn't working or whatever, let us know. We have something really cool coming for you guys that you're going to like, and I'm going to post about it today or tomorrow. I think you'll like it. So we're going to keep giving them as many gifts as we can to
Team
Zen. And
keep giving me feedback, because we want to make it better. So please give us feedback. I've already gotten some, but keep doing it. Please.
All right. We love you guys.
Keep trucking.
Bye-bye.